I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
So, now we're officially a proper podcast because we actually started recording this episode you're about to hear, and then we realised it wasn't recording.
So guess what?
Hey, it happens, dude.
Exactly.
It happens. So, basically, we're going to do this again. This is our round two, and welcome to the podcast, which is, and that's why I messed up, talking about nerdery, geekery... We're talking about nerdery and geekery and all else in between from a South London postcode. It's all right, bruv. It's all good. Next to me is my boy. I love him.
I'm not perfect.
My brother. No one's perfect. You're a flawed human being. It's the classic, bruv. You're right.
No.
It's okay. It's all right. Like I said, every podcast I ever listen to has a thing where they're like, this is the fifth time we're doing this. So, hey, bear with us. And on the other side of me, I got the original Burger Red Big Man.
What's up, everyone? Hello, people. I hope everyone is well and keeping safe.
We are. So, we know what we're talking about, but you don't know. We today are going to talk about the awesome sitcom Red Dwarf, which basically piloted from 1988 on BBC Two until 1999, came back to life on Dave from 2009, and is still going. Even though, full disclosure, I have only seen, I think, series 10 on Dave. I haven't seen the next three, because I think it's up to 13 now. But yeah. Red Dwarf, for those of you who don't know, is a science fiction sitcom basically charting the life of one Dave Lister, played by Craig Charles, who was basically put in cryostasis for 3 million years. His companion is his former, you can say boss, but technically
supervisor. I'll say supervisor.
Technically supervisor, Rimmer. So Arnold Judas Rimmer.
No,
BFD. SCC, aka, what is it, Bronze Certificate, yep. And Silver Certificate, played by Chris Berry. We also had The Cat, played by Danny John Jules, and Sanitation Joy Crichton, who is played by Robert Llewellyn, who joined, his first debut was in season two.
Crichton.
Yeah, the episode was Crichton, and then he didn't come back until season three. Where he was there full time and has been ever since.
It wasn't him that played him in the second.
Oh yeah, he wasn't Robert Llewellyn in the first one. I can't remember. I think it was David Ross.
Something like that.
He played him in the first in the debut episode, and was Robert Llewellyn. And weirdly, Robert Llewellyn is the only original cast member to actually appear in the US pilot.
Was he playing Crichton in the US pilot?
Playing Crichton, yeah. And also,
no, I'm joking.
Which might have been what Craig Charles might have said about about a series that he calls White Dwarf, but we'll talk about that in a bit, and also how the fact that Long Kiss Goodnight is linked to Red Dwarf, which is just weird. Yeah, and we also have Norman Lovett as the ship's computer, Holly, who became Holly then became Hattie Heyrich, and then has gone back to Norman Lovett since season 10, I believe. So yeah, one of the things I love about Red Dwarf is that I see myself reflected, because Danny John Jules is black and Craig Charles is black as well, and they're not sidekicks, they all feature prominently, have their own storylines, and you know, the main character is Lister. And for those who haven't watched it, I beg you, go find it. I think American people, I think you might be able to find it on iPlayer or where, I'm not sure, but I'm sure you can find it online.
It's not Netflix anymore, is it?
No, it's not. And it's not even on BritBox anymore either.
Oh, that's a damn shame.
So I don't even know where it is, but I'm hunting for it.
You must find it. I will find it.
Must find it, because I love it, but I'm not paying £11 a season on Amazon for that at all. Thank you very much, but no. So yeah, I remember watching, I don't remember watching it from the very beginning. I think I started watching around season 2 when it first actually aired.
I think my earliest memory of it is watching it with you in your bedroom.
Yep.
In Brixton. That's my earliest. It's on Apple TV. It's on Apple TV and Prime.
Oh, it's on Apple TV. Oh, okay.
But Prime didn't pay for it.
Yeah. I wonder if Clint... Anyway. moving on from that little thing there. I think I love the fact that... when I was doing research for this episode, is how things kind of came about and the weird things that came about, like the fact that Alan Rickman and Alfred Molina auditioned to be for Rimmer.
Again, thinking of Alan Rickman in Red Dwarf, again, this takes me back to Galaxy Quest. I can just see him be like, obviously not playing the character that he was technically supposed to be playing, but playing the actor that he was supposed to be playing, that he was in that film, because like, His one-liners, like, where are you going? To see him as a pub! I can see him doing that.
It's that, but it's also the... By Grapthar's hammer. What a saving.
Alan Rickman, rest in peace.
Shout out to Alan Rickman. I love that irony of so Red Dwarf and then he ends up in Galaxy. Okay, fantastic. But Alfred Molina ended up playing, and originally was supposed to play Rimmer, but he didn't understand the concept of Red Dwarf.
I can't understand that. How can you basically read for a role and then have no idea what you did?
But you know what? If you think about it, I kind of can get it, because it's not a show. It's not a show that always has a tidy ending. And this is the time before something like Seinfeld. So it didn't have a tidy ending. There's this kind of loose that Rimmer wants to get back to Earth because they're 3 million light years away. But it's also, I think, because it's so not Star Trek. Do you get what I mean? And so not the things we've seen in sci-fi at the time. So I get how the discomfort of that, especially in the 80s, was a bit like, I don't get it. Do you get what I mean?
Yeah.
No.
Wow. Okay. Well, fair enough. I've popped a big deal.
Fine. I'm being stubborn. I apologize.
But no, I do kind of. I think right now, like, there are some things that are great about kind of being into sci-fi and things like this now, because we get to see some amazing, interesting content. People are trying things that they wouldn't try before. I think sometimes trying those things in those days was a bit like, I'm sorry, what? What? You know, you're used to a Captain Kirk type. You're not used to grubby Dave Lister being the who by his own admission doesn't know that much and is the only person left and is the one chosen by Holly to, well, he's anyone who's alive to come out, obviously. And it's just a case of, you think, well, this is not really the protagonist that we're used to. So I could kind of get it, but also a bit like, Alfred, But in a way, I'm kind of glad he didn't get it because I can't see him as Rimmer.
Nah.
Because I'm stuck between him being...
I can see him being Crichton, to be honest.
Crichton, yes, but I'm stuck between him being like money in Raiders of the Lost Ark and Doc Ock. So it's like, yeah, there's no space for a Rimmer.
Fair enough. I can't argue with that. Yeah, because I can definitely see Rickman doing that character justice big time. But is that
because of Galaxy Quest though?
No, it's because
actually, you know what? It's because Rickman was such a fantastic actor.
Yeah, he's so good. Die Hard was his first major role, and the man was intimidating Bruce Willis to the point where it's like, who is this guy? Why is he so important? Blah, blah, blah. He was literally intimidated by the man's presence.
He's the only highlight in Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves.
Exactly. And Kevin Costner was pissed off about that too.
When you can say a film that has Morgan Freeman is outdone by Alan Rickman, you know this is what we're talking about here. Because the only highlight of that film is Alan Rickman.
Mm.
Yeah, completely. And then like him as, I mean, my favourite role of it is him as the, Dogma.
Yeah,
that's my favourite. And him spitting out the drink. So I absolutely... I love it because he begins in a way and he gets like, you know, half drunk and talking about the battle and being bored. And then the tenderness, like when he does a scene about when he goes about how he had to talk to Jesus because the father couldn't talk to the son without killing him. Okay. And when he said, make it all go away. And the emotion. R.I.P. Alan Rickman. Anyway, I'm gonna get off the clock. I'm gonna get sad about Alan Rickman and how it's a great talent. But yeah, in the link to Long Kiss Goodnight, Craig Bierko, who played the assassin in Long Kiss Goodnight and the main antagonist, was cast as Dave Lister in the US pilot.
Again, I'm looking at a picture right now and I can't see it.
And actually, following on from that, when there's an interview with Craig Charles about it, and other than him calling it, Craig Charles calls it White Dwarf. There's an interview with Danny John-Jules about it. And Danny John-Jules was basically saying that when it went to the US, they made Lister cleaner, which is like,
that defeats the point.
Exactly. Because you have so much around the fact that he's a dirty slob.
Yeah.
And in Danny John-Jules' opinion, which I do agree with, he said that he feels that only John Belushi or a John Belushi type could have played Dave Lister. I agree.
That's a good shout.
Yeah, I was like, no, I actually agree. Apparently, though, it was received well, but the studio execs didn't like it. And as I said, Robert Llewellyn was Crichton. And I'm always like, I don't know how that works, that you, in the pilot, you've already got Crichton in the first.
But the IT crowd, American version did that. They got, what's his name from, they got David, I keep forgetting his last name. I can't pronounce his last name.
Ayoade.
They got him to play this character he played in the English version, in the American version. And they got, I forget the actor's name from,
Community.
The main guy from that in playing. They do that all the time. Because obviously it's kind of easy because there's no one like
Richard Ayoade at all. There's no one like Robert Llewellyn.
Mm.
Robert Llewellyn is, other than being the guy who talks about electric cars and stuff, there is no one like Robert. And he's a very nice guy. I've met him.
He's a really nice guy. I've met him too.
He's really nice. I'm going to say, you've met him as well, haven't you, bro?
I think I've met everyone in the cast except for Chris Barry. He's the only one I have not met. Everyone else I've met.
I've met Danny John-Jules. Mm. That was random because I met him in Ladbroke Grove outside a club. And he was fresh. You know what? How weird it is. He was fresh off doing Lockstock.
Oh wow!
So it was really weird. So because he was out of context, and in the same night, I met one of the girls, the original girls from Sugar Babes.
Oh bloody hell!
It was just a random weird night back in my heyday where I basically turned. I went, and because he was out of context, I just went, "Oi, oi, oi, Danny," like that, because I just didn't know what else to do.
My girl's familiar with him.
And he was like, "All right, my girl." And then I was just thrown. And then, like, we did like the pounds and everything. I got to him. And then he looked at me, I've gone, "No, you don't know me, but you literally just threw me off guard because I've only just watched Lock, Stock the other day." And then we just started laughing and then we just started talking and it was really cool.
Mm.
And then I walked further down Ladbroke Grove towards the station. We had just come from doing a sound check at a club called Subterranea that used to be down there.
Mm.
I was just coming out of the sound check, was going to go home, and then turned and I saw the original Asian girl from Sugar Babes. I looked at her and she looked at me, but we held, you know, you hold the look too long.
Yeah.
So you can't not say anything. I was like, so I just was like, "Wow." And she was like, "You're," I was like, "I'm just thrown." I said, "Now it's gone on too long and too awkward." So we introduced each other and I was like, "Why are you doing it no more?" And then she was telling me some tea about why she wasn't in the Sugar Babes anymore. And I was like, and then we just started talking for a bit. And then her friends kind of turned up and then they went off, but it was just a brand. And I just came home and was like, "Right." And I came home and the person I think was like, "Oh, what are you about to?" I was like, "Well, I just saw the cat and I just saw Sugar Babe." And she's like, "What?" And then just told her what happened. It was a weird night. It was a very weird night.
Sounds like it.
But Danny John Jules was absolutely lovely. It was really cool. And yeah,
it's funny because we've done Danny John Jules. We had a sign in it. It's from my FP days because basically I met everyone barring Chris Barry through working at Forbidden Planet.
Mm.
And with Danny John Jules, there was this new sci-fi show which flopped. I can't remember what it was called, but we were doing a signing for it. And like we had, I need to find out what it is before I actually, what was it called? It was like you knew it was going to be a flop, but you know, you had hope for Danny and all that. What was it? Okay, I can't find it. I don't know what it is. But because we had a big signing for it. It was like most of the cast were there. And he turned up like a half an hour late to the thing. And like it was just like he just rocked up. Hey, what's up, guys? He's like, "Dude, you're like an hour late, man. Where have you been?" And like everyone,
oh my god, it's still Galaxy Quest. Do you realize that's still Galaxy Quest, right? Because that's what happens with the Tim Allen character. He's late.
Yeah, to be fair, you ain't wrong. And with Craig Charles, I met him when I was working convention. This is when it was the FSX Weekender, when it used to be a thing, but now it's called the Sci-Fi Weekender. And he came, he was speaking on a panel. It was like a one-on-one interview on stage, and then afterwards he was going to do one of his DJing shows because, you know, he likes doing his funk DJ sessions.
He does.
It's not, again, it's not my thing, but when you see a man doing something that he loves, you can't help but
it's great. I've been to one of his shows. It's really good. Yeah,
he was basically just going off. Like, he was just ripping everything. He had like a bunch of Red Dwarf cosplayers on the stage. It was just like, it was really good. It was a really good session, I gotta say. But then it was the following morning when I saw him. My man was fucked. Like, you could, do you know when it's just, you can tell it's just been one of those days? Like, because we had literally gone down for breakfast and I just came from the toilet and he was just coming. I don't know where he was coming from, but my man looked like he was done. He was tired. He was confused, and do you know when he literally stopped in the middle and had to have a big think. He was like, so they just looked at this guy and went that way, and he went that way, and I was just like, Craig. Oh, Craig. Yeah. Fair enough. But no, he was still a lovely guy. He gave me a wave and everything, and same goes for Robert Llewellyn, because, like, again, he's done a lot of signings at FPN. He was always just talking to everybody. He was just a lovely guy to be around. So, props to them.
He gives a lot of time, and I think I've met Craig Charles, and he also because he also has a funk
Star Hike. Sorry.
Stop. Okay, thank you for that.
Sorry.
Got there in the end. Bless you. He does that. I think actually right now it's happening, Quay Charles' funk show that he does every Sunday. But and he's up on the Saturday nights as well, I think. And because we used to listen to it back in the day. And I actually asked him to do like a birthday thing for our daughter. And he did that. So, which was, I still had the picture of him like doing it because I basically was trying to, I was explaining to him that she didn't understand, she was just starting to understand that the guy on the radio is Lister. So he did this really nice picture of him like hold, like with like a happy birthday to her in like his mouth as like kind of going like he's Lister, but he's also doing the DJing. So I was like, oh, thank you so much. It's really cute. But, and I think one of the interesting things I found out is that the production team of when the series was starting, they originally approached Quay Charles because at the time he was kind of known as a punk poet, and like Liverpudlian punk poet, because they were concerned that people might think the character of Cat was racist, because I can tell they basically knew they were going to cast someone black as Cat. So Dave Lister was like, so Charles, I was like, oh my God, Quay Charles is like, nah, Cat's pretty cool. And then when he read the script, he's like, actually, I want to audition for Dave Lister. So he did. And, you know, the rest is history. But I like that kind of, you think this is like the 80s. So it's like 88. So in the 80s, even then, what I like is the production team was still very aware that Cat could have been seen as some kind of weird caricature, kind of, you know, glorified minstrel. And were aware. And then was like, we may think it's fine, but the community might not. Who can we reach out to guide us and say yes or no? Which shows a kind of awareness that now people be like, oh, we doing that for? It's like, well, because there are issues and it's important that if we're going to do representation, that we're going to do it right. And it's better. I think we've covered this in season one where we said that some things from the 80s and 90s had more, much more representation and much more kind of awareness than some things now. And I find that quite interesting that BBC Manchester were reached out to Quay Charles and going, hey, you know, what do you think? We appreciate the feedback. And I love the fact that Danny John-Jules turned up to his audition half an hour late. See, that it keeps running in a zoot suit. And they were so blown away, even though he was late, they were like, yeah, you're hired because you're just you. And a great dancer and a great singer. But I absolutely love the fact that everything feels equal. Everything feels kind of like when you see like there are images and flashbacks of the staff and the crew and what have you. It's a mixed mash of everybody, which is what I think we see a lot of. And some things don't. It hasn't continued, unfortunately. That's a damn shame. And I also like the fact that the challenge of Red Dwarf is that there are no aliens in it. And people might go, "Oh, there are." It's like, no. There actually are no aliens. Everything that you see, like any creatures, are usually the products of something that's gone wrong where humans have messed it up, like the suicide squid in one of my favourite episodes, and the Gelf, who were genetically modified, so, and like androids or you know, simulants, who have basically, you know, androids that have repaired themselves and, you know, risen up and turned against and hunting people down. I like that idea. I think something more challenging. And also, it's goddamn hilarious.
It's very true. Okay, let's see. Okay, questions for everyone, but let's go. Big Man first. Big Man, your top three favourite Red Dwarf episodes and why?
Ooh, that's hard. I mean...
That's what she said.
In reverse order, number one has to be the Inquisitor. No ifs, no buts.
Yeah, that
episode, no matter what mood I'm in, I can just easily reach for it, and I'm just laughing from beginning to end. I'm trying. You know, the sad thing is, there's so many. Trying to remember the names to the episode is gonna bug me.
But I'll be able to describe it. We all know it. I'm pretty sure.
I'm gonna say, yeah.
Right. There's an episode where Crichton was coming off very, very much like Max Headroom. And he kept on repeating himself like he had a malfunction. And he's bugging.
Was that the one who's being replaced?
Yes, that is The Last Day.
Wow.
That's called The Last Day.
Last Day, we got replaced by the new mother. Yeah.
WD-40 mix of Vimtone. You've been looking at my. my recipe book? Yep. I'm trying to think, what episode, what season was that? Season three, episode six.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, wow.
You got one more, Big Ben.
Last day, Inquisitor.
Gosh, let's see. I'm trying to think. What's the name? Pressure.
Or just describe the episode, and once again, I'm sure we can help you.
Right, so I think, bear with me, this one is... Oh, wait. I can see. Is it called Parallel Universe, I think?
Yeah, where they go through in the shower. Is that where they go back? The Parallel Universe one, I think, is where they have to go back in the shower and there's like the time hole.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, that's the one, yeah.
There's a time hole on the lower deck and they have to basically end up going back to when things happened. And they try and see if they can put somebody else in stasis.
Yes, that's the
and
one.
And it ends where there's like multiple Rimmers and multiple Listers.
Yeah.
And they, I think they end up where they go into the hotel room with Kachansky and they find that there's another Lister with Kachansky and that in that universe,
they're married.
Christine and Lister had got married. That's the one, yeah?
That's the one. Well done. Very impressed.
Yeah. All right, sis, your turn.
Backwards. It's one of my favorite episodes. Mm-hmm. Not null. Oh, God. The one, Justice, is also one of my favourites as well.
I do like Justice. Justice is a really good one.
Yeah. Justice is a really good one. Oh, God. Quarantine. I know, sorry, guys. That's one of my favourite ones as well because of Mr. Flibble.
Yeah,
Mr. Flibble and the King of the Potato People.
Do you have a magic carpet? Yeah, full seater. So let me get this straight. You want to be the King of the Potato People and find his magic carpet, and you're not crazy. Wow, I love that.
The one where Rimmer tries to escape, and he ends up going on the planet, and they make a load of. He makes a load of himself.
Oh, that was season six.
Rimmer World. Yeah, because when it's like, behold my concubine.
Do not gaze upon her beauty.
And then you turn, and it's actually Chris Barry as the one of the women giving a kiss, and it's the grossest thing.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Oh, God.
I am he!
That and, oh, my God, an honourable mention goes to when they go to the planet. What's it called?
Terraform,
which is season 5, yeah. Episode 3. Yeah, where they land, and basically the planetoid basically becomes what Rimmer thinks of himself.
Mm.
And at the end, they have the parts of him that they have to be nice to Rimmer.
Yeah.
And I like when Kat's like, I'm opening up for all such depravity.
They're not lying. They really care about you.
They really care about you. Because I just like when Cryer goes, we have to tell the enemy is in here with us. We have to tell Mr. Rimmer that we love him. And it's just kind of like, you guys are sick. And like at the end, when it all gets sorted out, they fly off. You're like, you didn't mean that, did you? They were like,
No.
So yeah, those are my favorite episodes. Because it's just the comedic timing. And I think it was just, especially like from season 3, because I think I said it previously, that 1 and 2 were good. You know, especially for the budget they had as well. They made a lot work. And also it's quite interesting as to the people who were in it. So it's the guy who plays Mr. Weasley's in it. That's his best friend, Peterson.
Mm.
And it's quite a few people that just pop up who are just in there because that's how the BBC does. You have strange people who are like, oh my God, you're really like yes, I know you know who I am, but I was in Red Dwarf season 2 and what have you. Season 3, especially with Crichton, with Robert Llewellyn, was like chef's kiss. That is when it starts. Season 3 is when it really, really just hits the points. There's so much more funny episodes to me from season 3 onwards. But once again, not discounting season 1 and 2. It's when we get to season 7 that I stop.
I didn't do my favourite episodes.
Oh my God, how dare I? Go on, bruv.
That's fine. No,
my dear. Come. Tell me.
Okay, cool. All right.
Talk to me. Go on. What's your favourite episode, bruv?
Okay, so top number 3 is Quarantine.
Ooh. Yeah. Mr. Flibble.
Yeah. Number 2 is Back to Reality, because that one was just so surreal. Like,
oh, that was, yeah. Oh my God, I love that one.
So good.
That is a brilliant one.
So that's where the squid gets involved. What we were talking about,
the suicide squid.
Suicide squid, and basically, yeah, they get put into this. They get sent to this alternate reality where apparently Red Dwarf has all been a simulation,
which is so weird. Like, yeah. Usually now, where like they're getting up out of like headsets, it's like, oh my God, it is basically VR.
So like, and it was just like,
wait for it, bruv. Dwayne Dibley?
The introduction to the infamous Dwayne Dibley.
Dwayne Dibley.
Dibley.
The buck tooth angel.
When our teeth that can be used by druids as a place of worship.
Oh, yeah, Back to Reality is still probably, it's definitely number 2. And number 1 will be the Horseman of the Apocalypse.
The award-winning Horseman of the Apocalypse. Yeah, that is a good episode too.
I'm a gamer at heart. In fact, they were in a video game trying to fix.
Yeah. Lines,
that just appeals to me all the time, every day. And with again, Danny Donjill's cat going, Riviera kid. Shut the bullets out the air. Kind of. It was just like, yeah, yeah. I'm sorry. Give that to me every single day.
And I like the Britishness of it, where Rimmer goes, I know how to order 2 drinks of ginger ale and a whiskey. It's like, what? A chair on the top and a little dash of... It's like, yeah, I love it. I absolutely love it. Those were really good episodes. And like I said, it's the gamer part of it. And I like how like the silliness in it like when things don't work, and it's a blinding episode. Yeah, it's up there with me. That's true. Oh, I do love that episode. My God.
Can you hear that?
Sorry?
Again? Can you hear that?
Hear what?
Exactly. Right, that's what I need to know. Perfect.
I feel like I just got cussed. Like, did you just cuss me? What did I do? I don't know if I should feel like, was I insulted?
I did feel like I was being told off there. I just felt like,
hear that? Hear what?
Exactly.
Nothing. Good, you hear anything? Shut up now. Karen talking.
Oh, okay.
Well, Terry just tried to make a cameo appearance. I wonder if you want to.
No, we are. Shout out to Terry every time. He wants to be part of the podcast, bless him. Which seems like a one. Terra actually is a really good intro into season 7 and season 8 and season 9.
Does it have to be an intro to season 7, season 9? Do we have to do that? I'm not thinking of the positives and going the good times now, like, you know, like Mr. Flibble, you know.
I know.
Wayne Dibley.
Wayne Dibley.
I'll give season 7 one good moment. I'll give him credit for this. I actually quite like what they did with this concept,
which is
Ace Rimmer.
Oh, yeah.
I'll give him credit for that, because that was an interesting concept that the whole
thing. Yeah.
For those who don't know, so in season 7, I think it was episode 3 or 2. I think it was 2, actually.
2. Stoke me a clipper.
Yeah. So Ace Rimmer, as we know, is the alternate version of normal Rimmer, basically, who's a hero, a dashing cavalier, devil be care hero. You find out that he wasn't the original Ace Rimmer, that the original Ace Rimmer died, and he passed on the mountain to another Rimmer. And that's happened, and you find that's been happening for years, that they've passed on the name for years and years, carry on the legacy of Rimmer, and it was this reality's Rimmer's turn to take on the mantle. And season seven, I'm not a fan of it, but that episode, nah, I will definitely give it credit, because they did something new, and I felt like, as much of an arsehole as Rimmer has been, I felt like he had some good moments. I mean, like season 6, he took up his cannon and tried to save everyone.
Yeah, true.
And he had many moments, but he had some moments, and I thought it was kind of good for him to have his moment to shine for a change. So
yeah,
that's the only time I'll give season 7 some credit, was that episode.
Yeah, very true. Actually, yeah, that was a good episode. I like the concept. I just think that it was really obvious because Rob Grant had left to pursue other non-Red Dwarf projects, so just left Doug Naylor to do it.
Mm.
And, you know, love for them both, but I just don't feel like without Grant, the comedic element was missing, so I felt there's more misses than hits. But you're right, Stoke Me a Clipper,
was really good. Christmas.
Yeah, was a really good episode. But it's also like, that was kind of with Chris Barry leaving as well.
Mm.
So it's like, we've spent all this time constructing this really perfect kind of thing. And then, you know, and then they brought back Christine Kachansky. And that is when I was like, you know what, because Christine Kachansky is, you know, it's the whole kind of thing of, she represents the things he could have and should have done, the chance he should have taken, even for a moment, and he didn't. So to kind of bring her in, and then kind of going down this route where Crichton is jealous of Christine Kachansky, it's a bit like, yeah, you know what? I'm kind of done.
Mm.
It's just, yeah. it just didn't hit it for me. And then there was a kind of, when it went back in time, I was like, yeah, you know what? I'm just, yeah.
No, what happened? No, you go back in time. It was basically that. What was it? If I'm not mistaken, it was the nanobots.
That's it.
Yeah, look, they found Red Dwarf, and the nanobots had disguised Red Dwarf as a giant asteroid.
Yeah.
And they used those nanobots to recreate Red Dwarf, fix Lister's missing arm, and it basically fixed Red Dwarf to a point of bringing back everyone who had been dead. Which yeah. I thought, and it's, about that point, it's defeat the purpose of Red Dwarf, because like,
yeah,
then there's no point now. What's the point? Because like the whole point, the whole idea is Red Dwarf was like these four people trying to get back to Earth and just go on these zany adventures. Now you bring back like, everyone, and then you put them in prison. No, that prison, the prison part pissed me off even more. I was like, it made no sense. It was just stupid. But I'm trying to make sense of a sci-fi show. It's not really the thing. But if you've been with a show as long as the dwarf, if you're with a real dwarf, it's like it makes perfect sense, like not to do shit like that.
I literally stopped watching after. I just would turn in and be like, oh no, this is even worse than I thought. Yeah, thanks. I just rather not. Thank you very much. And yeah, so, and actually, no, I said season 10. It's actually season 11 I started watching from, because that's the ones that were on Dave.
Yeah, because season 10 technically was that four-part special Back to Earth.
Yeah, and I haven't watched that either.
You haven't watched that? The only, I'll give it credit for two moments.
Okay.
One, when Lister meets Craig Charles on the set of Coronation Street. That is cool. That's probably one of the best scenes in the whole thing. The other one is basically when Lister, because the whole idea basically there's another version of the Suicide Squad, but it doesn't actually cause you to commit suicide. It causes you just to find happiness in a sense.
All right.
So
okay.
Lister's thing was basically because in the storyline, Christine Cachanti had left Red Dwarf. And
right, okay.
They didn't know why and everything. And then in this new reality, Lister had decided to stay in the illusion to be with Christine Kuchansky. And then when it came to the point, when he realized that, he was like, yeah, I'm going to leave. And obviously the illusion was saying that, like, you're leaving me, but. Yeah, he goes like, yeah, I'm gonna find the real you, and she's like, but you're not good enough for me. He goes like, you know what? Yeah, I am, because I'm pretty brave, you know. I'm pretty smart, you know. I'm not the greatest guy, but I'm pretty good, you know. And I was like,
that's what I liked about it, about Red Dwarf.
Yeah,
is seeing him, because it's not, because the slobstick can get really easy, easily overdone if it's just a one dimensional character. No one in that is a one-dimensional character.
Mm.
They all keep going. And I like little tricks they use. I like the fact that all this stuff happens between season 2 and 3. And the way they get around that is say, you know what? Here it is. And you just have that intro in the beginning sequence, and that's it. And then if you just pause and read it, you find out what happens, like why Holly has now become Hattie Hayridge as opposed to Northern Lovett. But that's the thing, is that you start off with Dave being this slob, but he goes on and he makes those choices himself. He does say sometimes, I'm going to use my brain for a change. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. And he has the confidence. And I like that. That's what should happen.
Mm. Yeah, that's the only thing I keep praying, because obviously, like, because you kind of got, like, satisfaction of following Lister from season 1 to where he is now. It's like, you know, I'm like, yeah, I'm a pretty good guy, you know. You'd be lucky to have, if you have me, to be fair. So yeah, I'm gonna find you. So I was like, do you know what, yeah, you go and get Lister, because you are like, listen, because like Lister has evolved, like, from like
all completely have, yeah, like,
even Cat, because even though Cat has still always is still a vain creature, and to this day is still a vain creature, he will back you. If he will have your back, like, regardless of the situation. He'll hate you, like Rimmer. He hates Rimmer, but he'll still have his back in certain situations. So, you know, you got to respect that. You got to respect that kind of evolution in characters.
I mean, his reasons may be questionable, like when he said, you know, I see what you're saying, but I must back Lister. Why? Because I can't go with someone who wears those at that outfit. It's like, you may not like it, but you understand. I like the journey of Crichton breaking his programming, and what that means to have the ability to lie, and how he defaults sometimes. Even Rimmer, he still has an arc, but it's still, he's an arsehole. Because ultimately it's like, I think what the whole thing does say is with Rimmer is that people like this will blame everybody but themselves. at least Lister is accountable to himself. He knows what he's done. He knows that he got himself in the position because of things that he chose to do. Whereas with Rimmer, it's constantly, I had the wrong parents, I didn't go to the right school, this is wrong, that's it, blah, blah, this, that, and the other. And it's that kind of thing where it's like, he has an arc where he does what's right ultimately sometimes. However, it's still from a lens of, well, you know, it wasn't my fault. And sometimes with our souls, it's like, you just have to recognize that that's just who they are. They may have shining moments. And I like that. I like the fact that he has a limited arc, but Lister has the bigger arc. The nicer ones have the better arc than the idiot. But sometimes you need an idiot to do idiot shit. Like, make a world of themselves. Ew. That's gross. Big man, you all right there?
Yeah, I'm here.
You're just trying to keep terror on lock, are you?
No. Of sorts.
I think the thing with Red Dwarf is it's one of those things that it's once again a thing where I'm glad that there's no US version because I don't think a lot of it would have translated at all. It's very British. It's very very 80s to 90s British of that kind of punky, unapologetic, weird. No one is clean. Do you get what I mean?
Yeah.
That rhymed. That was weird. That happens sometimes. So I don't think that would have translated, especially at the time with a lot of American counterparts I can think of at the time in the 90s. I don't think there's anything like Red Dwarf could have been. It's like spaced, again. Can't translate, you know, and I feel like there comes every so often, there comes quite a few, especially with British things, where it's like, it is impossible to translate. And I feel like it's of the time, like Garth Marenghi's Dark Place. Can you imagine them trying to do that in the US?
Yeah, that won't run.
It just wouldn't work. Garth Marenghi's Dark Place, spaced, not doesn't work. We've gone through as to why space won't work. Red Dwarf's the one that wouldn't work. Brass Eye wouldn't work. Drop the Dead Donkey wouldn't work. There's just this plethora of really good comedy in the 90s. You know, No Problem, I wouldn't have worked because No Problem was directly about the black experience of when you've come from a family who basically, you know, are Jamaican and what that immigrant experience is like, but also when the parents would go back and leave you, what's that like? And I think because we're very well versed in what that feels like and looks like, I don't think there's a counterpart in America.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that's okay. Not everything has to. That's the point with Red Dwarf. I think it's a thing with. I think when you think of America, you think of Star Trek, you think of those like neat little, neat tidy episodes. And this is not me saying that Babylon 5 and Star Trek aren't good and what have you, but I think there's a roughness about Red Dwarf that would not have translated to the American audience or to have an American version. What do you guys think?
No, it's, I mean, as you just stated with a list of names, it's not everything can convert from UK to US, but I mean, Red Dwarf you would thought possibly could have worked. But maybe the casting was just wrong.
To be honest, the question I have to ask is how much of a say did the creators have?
Because they were involved in it. Grant and they were involved in it. Yeah,
But when it came to the casting and stuff, did they have a say, or was it just their input they gave? Because for example, the US office versus the American office. I mean, US was versus the British office. I mean, like, that was probably more successful than the British office ever was. I mean,
when I would say so.
And it still had the insight of Ricky Gervais and Steve Merchant,
yeah.
And the casting was spot on. So, and that went, what, how many seasons did that go on for?
Nearly nine, I think.
So, it's not a fact that things can't work. It's just that, are American producers willing to listen? Because at the end of the day, when it comes to adaptations, reimaginations, remakes, what have you, the work has already been done. It's all about what you choose to do with the information you have in your hand to make it work. Are you going to make the right choices and not get someone pretty to do play the part that's not supposed to be played by a pretty person? Or are you just going to go, what would be marketable? You know, what are you going to do? Like, that's what always comes down to when it comes to production and producers. It always comes down to what's marketable and what will work for, what would work in the in most industries. But if you're going to take something and try and make it marketable, or just try and, or you're going to try and make, take something and make it true for adaptation, that's the question you need to ask yourself, really, when it comes to doing shit like that.
And this is what's interesting with the US version, where they made it primarily a white cast, because people like to say things like, oh, see, racism, it's not really a thing, and you're going on about it. And it's like, it's because when you put something, you know, there wasn't this deliberate kind of, you know, the deliberate things are things like making sure that Cap wasn't offensive. You know, and in that process, they got Craig Charles, you know, as Lister. And it's gone on to be, you know, something really successful, cult following, you know, these guys can't move without someone going, oh, you know, what have you, or Smeg, or anything like that. So when people say, oh, it's not a thing, to take that out, obviously, when it goes across to the US, it does become something else. And it's almost like, at the time, why not have kept it the way it was with that casting? And it's almost like, maybe because some people were expecting there to be this heavily loaded stuff about it, when about black people and racism and this, that, and the other, where it's like, sometimes even people of color they just want to have fun. It's why I don't watch certain things now. Like, I'm looking forward to watching The Harder They Fall. That just looks like some fun with some really good coats. And you know all now how we feel about a good coat up in The Harder They Fall. Yeah. Might find coat. And why I don't watch things like Antebellum anymore. I don't watch things where it's like I do, because it's like, I don't want to watch torture porn. I don't want to watch the suffering porn. I don't want to watch things about slavery. I just want to see people of color existing, having fun and doing man and weird shit. And that is quite literally Red Dwarf. And to take that and change that and go, no, you guys can't have fun. You have to do this. Let alone the biggest sin to me. And I'm actually looking at the pilot, at the cast, a cast photo of the Red Dwarf USA pilot. And I'm just like, you all look so clean. Why are you clean? I like the idea that just because they're in the future, in the 30th whatever century they were, doesn't mean it's all clean and sparking and new. It's rough, it's scavenging, it's doing all this other, and I love that idea. And yeah, but I do agree with you, bruv. It does the production, because, you know, even though it does say that Grant and Naylor were there and they were a part of it, it then becomes a very different studio system in the US to the system in BBC or working in the UK. It's a very different system. And you know, you're right. I think also it's taking them, and I think why the US office worked, I said it before, is that they took that concept, they took out things that would have landed like a flat balloon in the US and changed them to more US different. And as somebody who, like, I have watched both of them, I'll be honest, I prefer the US, which is weird for me to say. Yeah. I prefer the US one. I think, one, I'm not a big Ricky Gervais fan anyway. I don't want to punch the screen when he's on it. But I got the whole dynamic. I got it, and it was okay. Cringing with Steve Carell, it's a different cringe.
Yeah.
But everyone in, just like the UK one, everyone in it is blinding. But there's a bit more. I mean, the Stanley, did I stutter? Honestly, I die every time that bloody war happens, kind of thing. And once again, the same thing. There's actually, if anything, I think there's more in the US office. There's more color than there is in the UK one.
Definitely.
There's much more diversity and thing than there is in that. And I even like the one where Michael just gets it all wrong, because it's like, yeah, this is what happens when you don't discuss it and it becomes awkward and you get things wrong. When you don't discuss issues of race, gender, and what have you, what happens is it gets in the hands of people like Michael. And it becomes him doing, with a bandana on, doing that. You're like, oh God. Oh God,
prison,
oh,
Mike.
Oh, prison, yeah, prison Mike. You're like, oh, gee. And it's like, because that's what's going to happen if you don't talk about it. You let the idiots run it and they fuck it up. Whereas if you pretend it doesn't exist, you know, if you, you counter it and you even make mistakes, which is where I will keep giving props to the BBC for doing, for having a discussion and saying, have we gone too far? What can we do to make this make this work? Because I can't see Cat working any other way than Cat.
Yeah, no way.
Yeah,
I can't imagine. I can't imagine it.
Yeah, I don't want to imagine it. I don't want to.
I'm good. I got Cat.
Big after, you know, and I'm gonna do as a result of that. I'm gonna have to put the video to tongue tied in the show notes because absolutely. And I always give props to Craig Charles for playing that song every year without fail, either on his show or at one of his live shows, he will play Tongue Tied. And I love that. And props to Chris Barry and Craig Charles for doing the choreography for that. Mm-hmm. And the fact they actually charted with that song as well. Oh, dear.
I think we're going to call it quits there.
I think we've ranted enough at the people then. Mm-hmm. So I think we're going to call it quits. Thank you once again for listening. And, you know, and I'm going to start saying, if you could spend the time to give a little review on Apple Podcasts, you know, it helps the algorithm. You know, that will help us. So please leave a little review. And, you know, please, if you want to get in touch, you can email us at stjudesavengers@gmail.com. You can also reach out on Twitter at andmest. And you can also reach out on Instagram at messedup.pod. What about you, my brother?
You can find me on YouTube under Instant Classic Gaming. You can also find me on Twitch.
Uh-huh.
Instagram. I'm blank for a second. So Twitch, Instagram, and TikTok under Instant Classic _gaming. Big man.
Mother, brother.
And finally, I can be found on Instagram at Mr_Roberts_V1.
Thank you very much for your time, people. We look forward to speaking to you soon. And take care. Stay safe.
Have a smegging lovely day.
Smeg.
Bye.
Quite.
And that's why we're messed up. Produced by the St. Jude's Avengers, edited by Instant Classic Gaming, and music produced by Box Room Music.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.